This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Uni Ovens. Uni Ovens are out of the box easy. They're some of the best ovens on the planet. They're so portable. We own a bunch. We go to family parties with it. We do events outside. It's really amazing for our neighborhood. Uni Ovens get up to 950 degrees with a variety of models and a variety of price points. They have a model that's fit for everybody in their budget. With plenty of videos on their website and YouTube and their handbook that it comes with, you can get started right away on your journey to becoming an amazing pizza chef. We are also brought to you by Caputo Flour, Il Mulino di Napoli, the mill of Naples. Since 1924, Caputo has milled to offer professionals and baking connoisseurs the very best in quality flour. They offer flours for artisanal bakers, to pasta makers, New York style, Detroit, Roman. We use Caputo for everything. Every competition that I've ever won has been with Caputo Flour. If you guys ever have any questions about Caputo, check out Orlando Foods Facebook, Instagram, or check them out online. Leave them a message. They'd be happy to help you with whatever you want.
Dimmi che l'amor tuo non muore, e come il sole d'oro non muore mai più.
Are you recording? Make sure that goes on the back end.
Yep. I was going to put that on the back. Yeah.
All right, do it. And we are back at the Pizza Podcast. This is the Pizza Expo Las Vegas edition of this shit. And we got a real special guest, Giovanni
Mauro. I know, it's
from
Manzu
Pizza. All right. This guy, I fucking met this guy tonight at Vinny Rotolo's spot, Good Pie. He's doing some old school Sicilian shit over there, which I am fucking obsessed with, all about. That's my fucking culture. Even though I'm Neapolitan Sicilian, I love the Sicilian shit a little bit more. I'm really sorry, all my Neapolitan friends. I love you guys too, but like,
meanwhile,
you know,
he's got a trinacria on his a bicep over here.
That's fucking right. All right, because we're all about that Sicilian shit and fucking Gravesend.
But Nino, I gotta ask you a question. I know, I'm here to be interviewed by you.
Yeah,
but I gotta
you
ask
me whatever the fuck you. We're hanging out over here.
Listen. You brought out the Fernet Branco over here. We're sitting out. We just had a great event. I just want to chill with you. And I've got to ask, Nino, where does the name Nino come from? Coniglio, great Sicilian name. Coniglio.
Yeah. So Nino comes from Antonino.
Yeah.
That's all.
So I mean, grandfather or uncle or?
No. My grandfather was Luigi. My father was Sal.
It could have been Luigino.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It was just Antonino. I don't know. There wasn't any rhyme and reason for it. Like, I have a bunch of friends in Brooklyn who, so the Fortunato family, for instance, right? They're like George Foreman over there. They named all the fucking kids in a single generation Biagio. So there's like 18 Biagio. Then you got Two Brothers Pizza, who, they're big players in Staten Island. They're like really good guys. They're all named Giorgio, right? There's like 23 Giorgios in a single generation in that family. So I don't know if my father decided to change it up because of like seeing shit like that growing up or what fucking happened. But yeah.
Well, I like the name Nino for two reasons. One of my favorite singers growing up in Sicily was Nino D'Angelo. I don't know if you know this.
What was his real name?
No, his name is Antonino.
Antonino.
Yeah, Antonio D'Angelo, but everybody called him Nino D'Angelo, pop singer. And then my uncle, he was a butcher in the town of Licata, which is in the southern coast of Sicily, and a great, great human being. And his name was Nino. And so I have a particular affinity to the name Nino. So I had to ask.
Wow, Gio, I appreciate that. Oh. You know what I mean? Normally people are like...
You know, the Latins say, in vino veritas, which means in wine there is truth. So I'm a little tipsy, so I'm speaking the truth.
That's what we want on this podcast. We want the truth. And this is... He's got to lower
loud.
You.
No.
You're not too loud. He just can't see you on the camera because the thing is blocking it.
I've got a mug made for radio. I know you don't want me on camera.
Oh, no. So everybody goes on camera. Thing. Listen, you're a beautiful human being, Gio.
Thank you.
So what do they call you, Giovanni or Gio?
Giovanni. So my full name is Giuseppe Giovanni Mauro.
Okay.
When I moved here, they could have pronounced Giuseppe.
See.
And they could pronounce Giovanni better.
Okay.
So they went by Giovanni.
So instead of going with Joe, you were like, let me keep it Italian.
Correct.
And go with Giovanni.
Correct.
Makes
sense. That's what happened. That's why. And then from Giovanni went to Gianni, and then from Gianni went to Gio.
So where'd you grow up in Sicily?
In a little town called Canicati, Provincia d'Agrigento. And I switched back and forth between Canicati and Mussomeli, my dad's hometown. And I have to tell you, every time I say those two towns, there's a little tug at my heart. Because
And what are those? Those are Central Sicily?
Central Sicily, right?
Okay.
In the middle of the...
Middle of fucking nowhere.
Right.
Middle of fucking nowhere.
So we had great food, and we had each other. That's what we had.
Did they have any type of small farm plot or anything like that?
It was all like that. I'll tell you, I don't know why the story or this awareness came to mind right now. But I'd like to tell you a story about the European Union.
Sure.
My dad's hometown, town of 12,000 people.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There were about 20 families that used to make cheese. And they'd been making cheese for centuries and centuries and centuries.
What kind of cheese, you know?
Mostly pecorino and caprino, which is goat, right?
Okay.
Sheep, pecorino is sheep. Caprino is goat.
I've never even heard of caprino. Is that like a hard cheese, soft cheese, semi-soft?
It depends. Usually here in the States, we have our goat cheese is usually soft.
Mm-hmm.
But they dry age it in Sicily. It's a harder cheese.
Okay.
I've tasted one out of Sardinia that is very similar to what my family used to make. But it's very hilly, very mountainous. I should say more than hilly. So sheep and goats did well there. You couldn't have cows.
Right.
Because cows like plains. They don't like going up and down, right? So out of 12,000 people, we had 20 cheesemaking families.
Okay.
A lot of cheeseries, right? A lot of dairy.
Right.
So European Union comes in and sets up some health standards. Out of all of those 20 families, there's now two.
Because of regulation and all the fucking bullshit.
Because of regulations. So, and look, I'm not one.
And those people, I got to imagine, they're not like selling on even a national market. They're selling on a local market.
Correct.
For like 500 years or whatever it is.
Millennia.
Yeah.
These people have been making cheese since the Greeks colonized Sicily. I mean, seriously.
That's what they did.
Thousands of years.
No matter how many invaders they had, no matter how fucked up people fucked them in their asses,
they made still cheese. Persevered. Yeah. They made cheese. They retreated to the center of the island, and the European Union came in and decimated that whole market. Completely
Jesus.
Gone. There's out of 20 families, there's two left that are making cheese because of quote-unquote health standards. And look, I believe in science. I believe in health standards. There's no doubt about that. But sometimes when you homogenize things, you lose heritage. And that's the caution in modernity. We can't lose heritage. While we make transitions to bettering humanity, we cannot lose heritage.
Have you ever heard the story of the Connecticut cheese nun lady?
Yes! She's awesome!
Yeah.
The nunnery, right? That you're
Just real quick, for those who don't know. So there is, I forget her name. If you ever listen to this, I really apologize to you, ma'am. You're fucking amazing. You're a legend. So,
and we apologize for the colorful language because of your religious order.
I happen to be quite Catholic, but... I think she'd be okay with it. She seems cool.
So you're okay with saying she's fucking awesome?
She's fucking awesome.
All right, great.
100%. That's how I feel. Fuck the curse word bullshit. Anyway, so the Connecticut cheese down lady, she went to college to be a molecular biologist. Studied that, graduated, later on became a nun, joined a nunnery in Connecticut that had a French name that their sister nunnery was in France. She went to France where they had been making cheese at this nunnery for like 1,000 years, all right? And they use this like moldy wood barrel to do something. I don't know. It couldn't have been to boil the cheese or to make it hot, maybe.
No, they were curing it in the wood, but what they found...
They were curing it in the wood. But what happened was she started getting... She came back to Connecticut, learned from them, came back, started doing this, got popular because, you know, you're in an area of affluence, and you have people over there that understand that product, and the product was homemade and, like, better than France. And as she got popular, eventually, a few years later, the health department descended upon her and said, you are going to murder people with a salmonella.
Nope.
And being a molecular biologist, she reached out to her alumni and her professors, set up a lab, challenged the health department, and won. And it turned out that this moldy wooden thing that she was doing the cheese in, that she was so worried about, that everybody was so worried about, had less salmonella than a bleached stainless steel like cauldron that they would use.
Imagine the crazy concept that something that's worked for millennia is more valid than something that has been in science for 25, 30 years.
Right.
Imagine the concept.
Yeah.
Imagine that humanity for 30,000 years has developed, civilization has developed, and we've actually learned something from generation to generation. But all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, all of a sudden, the past 50 years, we became geniuses.
Right.
It's unbelievable to me.
Well, to be a little bit devil's advocate on that, there was a lot of things going on 200 years ago that we didn't understand, like from dysentery and cold water. But that's not an excuse for, like, really taking a hard look without... But, she had to pay her own money to do that.
But
you know? What
the validity resources. In modernity is that it doesn't take us generations to figure stuff out.
Mm.
It takes us years to figure stuff out.
Sure.
And what happens
well,
in science,
if you look
this
at
is
it.
Not safe, this is safe, this is great.
Yeah.
But we can't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Well, we can't take a binary look at anything.
Right.
We got to take a nuanced look at what we're looking at and say, like, wait a minute. You learned this in France. They've been doing this for 1,000 years. Let's take a closer look instead
Correct.
Of being binary where it's A or B. It's either right. wrong or right.
Correct.
Because nothing in this world is binary.
I couldn't say it better myself. This is where, so this is the world I live in. And I know, I'm a natural leaven guy.
Mm.
I don't believe in commercial yeast.
Okay.
And that's where this whole philosophy that we're speaking about right now speaks to home right now. Because I don't think that yeast made in a lab is as healthy and as good for humanity as natural yeast that exists out in the world. I could put water and flour, and I could give it some sugar, and I could replenish it, and all of a sudden, I have beautiful yeast culture.
Right.
That's what I want to eat. I don't want to
But you're using sugar?
No.
Oh, okay.
Never sugar.
Just...
Never refined sugar. I might introduce a fruit to add fructose.
Okay.
Banana peel, apple peel, half an apricot to give the yeast some food. But it really isn't even necessary because... If you get fresh enough wheat, it has enough sugar.
Oh, yeah. They are eating the starch.
To get the yeast to start propagating.
Starch gets converted
Incidentally,
sugar.
Propagating is a fancy way for saying having sex. The yeast actually have sex and propagate.
Produce more yeast.
Produce more yeast.
100%.
And it's it's awesome. People make fun of me because here's the deal. Most people have cats, they have dogs, they have birds. These are all pets, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have yeast.
It is
my
a
yeast
pet.
Are my
it is
pets.
A pet. You got to feed it at the same time every day.
Every day I have to feed it at the same time. I have to make sure it's the right temperature. I got to talk to it. I sing it. Look, I don't want to say this too loud, but I sing to my yeast every once in a while.
What do you sing to your yeast? Can you sing a little bit? Imagine I'm your yeast right now. Can you sing a little bit to me? As your yeast?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many songs. Ti voglio bene assai. That's one of the things. I love my yeast. My yeast is my
You're
baby.
You're a fucking good singer. Where'd you learn how to do that?
That's a different story. You want... So in a previous life, I have two loves in the world, besides, of course, my family and my kids are my first love. They're sacred, right?
They're number one.
They're number one. Let's take them aside. But my two loves in my profession are opera.
Okay.
And cooking.
And cooking.
And they're at equal level. And so you, early on, I was an aspiring opera singer.
Really?
Yeah. And I wasn't
worth... Did you go to school for that at all?
I did. I was an undergraduate opera performance. I wasn't worth shit. That's why I'm making pizzas now.
It seems like a hard thing to get into. It's a small market.
But
you're a great singer. I heard you singing when I was walking in here.
Oh, well. But that's my two things, man. I really make no distinction. Like, the love I have for opera is equivalent to the love I have for producing a great quality dough. It is just everything to me. And I, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy, and I'm starting to understand passion. Mm. Because passion is almost nonsensical. Why do you care so much about something like this? Why do you care so much about this subject?
Because that's the fucking point.
That is the point. That's my point. And so, I mean, seriously. And
if you only care about money, like, you have to care about money, like, at a certain point, because at a certain point, it's a tool. But, like, once you get the money, then what's the point? It's a passion. It's the making it right.
What about for those of us that don't have the money yet?
You got to make the money.
Well... As my Jewish friends would say, from your mouth to God's ears.
And the passion isn't stopping you from making the money, because the passion is, it's valued today. We're in 2021. People value that. But how do you get that message of passion out to customers, current and future?
Well, here's my truth.
There's where it gets tricky.
It does get tricky. And the message, and so there's people that are brilliant at sending out the message.
Mm.
And I have to say that I'm not one of those people. But here's my belief.
Yeah.
My belief is that at the end of the day, if you do the right thing in food, and people can eat it, and their stomach feels good, and they feel good the next day, they feel energetic, that their food doesn't weigh them down and make them feel sick, then their subconscious will tell them that that was good food.
Correct.
And that's what I do. Because how many people have eaten pizza and the next day they feel like crap?
And this
is why this whole movement of gluten is the enemy has come about. Because we, and I'm going to say this out to my colleagues, we have failed as professionals to treat dough correctly. We make dough in the morning and we want to cook it for lunch. And it's absurd. It's absurd that we think that a dough is ready to bake in 3 hours. It doesn't exist. You cannot make a corn field happen in a week. It takes the whole season. And this is just nature. This is the thing about dough that people need to understand. Fermentation is natural. It is beyond man. It is beyond, we can't fabricate it. We have to let time and temperature do its thing. And if you do that, then people will feel good. And guess what? It's rewarded in flavor. Because when you have a naturally fermented product, you know, how good does it taste?
Oh, it tastes great.
Right?
And it feels good, as opposed to
a dough that you make in 2 hours.
But it's not an instant feeling. Like, maybe people, like, when they eat it, if they're not educated on it, if we're not educating them, maybe they're like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't the dough that was feeling bad. Maybe it was the shitty cheese or the sauce or something
right.
else.
Or it's gluten.
Or it's gluten.
Gluten is the antichrist.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
It's nonsense. We have to get back to the basics. My motivation was to make dough. I said, look, all these people are saying that pizza's bad. And I'm thinking about, okay, it's wheat, which is natural, tomatoes, which is natural, it's a little bit of cheese, protein, it's natural. So why is it making, what is going on here? And so I went back and I said, okay, I want to make dough like my great grandmother used to make.
Yeah.
150 years ago. How did she make it? What did she do?
So what kind of flour you use?
So I use a generic flour, King Arthur.
Okay.
Very basic, quote unquote. It's not a overly commercial flour, but that's what I'm using now.
Yeah, it's unbromated, unbleached, but...
It is unbromated, unbleached, absolutely yeah. It is. But...
Which is great.
It is not...
Any flour that's unbromated, unbleached is fucking winning.
It's a step forward, right?
In my opinion.
But it's not something mind-blowing. It's
right.
Not something that people say, oh, he's using flour. It's
sure.
Not. It's middle of the road, right?
But you're one in 10% of places out here probably using a flour that's unbromated in the pizza game, even in Las Vegas.
Fair enough. But my point is that I'm using an average dough, an average flour, and I'm treating it in the way that people used to treat flour 150 years ago.
Yeah.
Which means zero commercial yeast. Now, there's people that put me in the category of flat earthers when I say don't use commercial yeast. I don't like commercial yeast. I don't like yeast made in a laboratory. I want my yeast to come naturally. Because why? It's there. Yeast is everywhere. Look, I know. You can't. Can
all
you
right.
See the camera?
I'm going to fire back at you a little bit.
I love
I'm
it.
I'm going to fire back at you.
Fire back. I can't wait.
So here's where I am. First of all, I think you'll like this a lot. I don't know if you've ever heard this, but back in the day when the internet was a lot younger and, you know, the things you looked up weren't as curated, let's say. I was finding these articles that were comparing, like, okay, why did they call bread and wine body and blood of Christ? And it's like the reason why they did back then was because the wine and the bread was made out of this wild fermented yeast product that like was like magic. You know what I mean?
It was magic.
You add this to this thing and it turns it into this amazing thing.
Can you imagine not understanding flour, not understanding science?
And then anywhere you are in the world, it just becomes alive.
And all of a sudden it's this big and it becomes this big.
And something that's
dead. How is that not magical?
Well, something that we understand as dead. We understand today, scientists, is flour alive or dead? It's dead. But when you add water to it and give it time, it becomes alive. Like, it's literal magic. And that's how it was viewed.
Or perceived magic.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think it's still pretty magical because there's a lot of things involved in it.
I think it's beyond magical. I think it's divine. I think it's
exactly. I consider magic and divine like the same thing. You know what I mean? What is divine in the end of the day? But what just happened?
What?
I don't know. All of a sudden, like, I'm getting feedback. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Went away. Now I'm talking. No. Anyway.
Just keep on going because you were in a roll, man. You were going. Don't worry.
So yeah. So, I mean, it makes perfect sense. And then I had a talk with my uncle who's like a semi-theologist. And I was like, after I read this stuff, I was like, all right, Uncle Gary MPME, what the fuck's going on with yeast? And they're like, well, in the Old Testament, yeast is evil.
What?
But in the Old Testament, the Bible, yeast is evil. But in the New Testament,
I would challenge that statement.
But in the New Testament, it's supposed to be a divine thing. All right, yeasted bread is like a celebrated divine thing. And when it comes to Christian theology, anything in the New Testament that contradicts something from the Old Testament is trumped. You understand? So
you're pushing back on me. Can I push back on you?
Yeah. So here's my only thing.
When you're done.
So the thing I'm going to push back on is I use wild yeast starter culture that I never put in the fridge. And I feed the same time every day. Yeah. And every single one of my doughs at different percentages. But I also use IDY fresh yeast and instant yeast to create different things. But I'm always adding between 10 and 30% of the wild yeast starter culture to the dough. So there's enough percent to create the starch resistance that lowers the glycemic index a lot to create the flavor, because it's such a big percent of the dough that it's instantly created. And then I can manipulate without, I see the problem as fermentation during aeration. What a lot of guys will do is they'll fill up a cup of salt, fill up a cup of sugar, and drop a half a block of yeast. You're not fermenting anything. You know what I mean? At that point.
No, I'm sorry. I'm having a traumatic...
but aerate, you're just aerating it when you're doing that. But aeration is important for flavor, too. Products and textures
of course,
to release of all, those flavors.
If I may be so bold.
Yes.
Sugar belongs nowhere. I do not disagree
with that, but if you go to... if you go to Sicily right now and get a spicchioni dough recipe from the highest level of the thing, they're putting 5% sugar in all their dough.
I agree. But the difference is that Sicily has had 50 years of economic downturn. Mm. And they don't trust their own methods.
Okay.
They don't believe in what their great-grandfathers used to do.
Right. But
it's insulting because they're adopting new world techniques because they want to stay relevant.
Well, they've been doing that a long time.
I wish I could speak to my compatriots in Sicily, because I'll go to my 87-year-old aunt that'll tell me how to make a dough. Before I'll go to a pasticcere, they'll tell me how to make a dough.
Right.
Because I want to know how they made it 200 years ago. Because that was true for 2 millennia, 3 millennia. And this is true for 20 years.
Right.
And we have to be cognizant.
I think it's more than 20 years.
Well, okay.
After World War II?
50? It hasn't been after World War II, because I'll tell you, my dad was born in 43.
Okay.
43. And he tells me the story of when Lievito di birra, which is brewer's yeast.
Yeah, the brewer's fresh yeast, right? What everybody knows out there is fresh yeast. Lievito
right.
di birra.
Lievito di birra. He said, I remember when that came to existence. I was 17 years old. I was in Musumeli. And none of us could muster eating the bread because it stunk. It stunk to us. It stunk like moldy mush. And now this is the standard.
Right.
And so I'm more interested in the man, by the way, he now has adopted. But
do you use a refrigerator for anything?
Of course.
You do.
But they used to in the old days, too. They used to use underground.
Oh, no.
Underground.
Sicily, especially where you're from, I'd be surprised if fucking like 2% of the population had refrigerators in the 1960s.
It's not about refrigeration. Let's talk 200 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. What my grandmother used to tell me is that to curate the yeast, they would drop it in a basket and lower it into the water well.
Mm-hmm.
Because the temperature down by the water was at a cool 76 degrees.
Real cool.
So they used to keep it down there to make sure that the culture stayed fresh for them.
Wow.
And so they would pull it back up, do their crescenti, it was what they would call it, and then make bread. And there's people that still do that, Nino.
I'm one of them. I have
that
fucking wine fridges where I keep it at 64 degrees.
That is my life. That is what I want to. There is validity in that. I want to say to my Sicilian culture to hold on to those traditions, to not throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Because there's such validity in the durum wheat and the way they milled stuff and the way that they fermented things, the flavor. Because at the end of the day, it's about the flavor and what it does to your body, right? Because if it tastes good, unless you're being tricked, right? And there's trickery in flavors. But if it's done naturally and it tastes good, that means it's good for us.
I 100% agree with that. And like, I mean, when you look at like recipes from Chad Robertson from Tarty Bread, in lieu of doing a, you know, a commercial yeast right in, he'll put 80%, you know, wild yeast starter culture in Poolish.
Yeah, why
instead
not?
Of putting 20%. And that'll give the same result. And then lowering the hydration and yada, yada, yada to get to the same thing.
Do you know what the most insulting thing is? I spoke to a very high-level bread guy.
Yeah.
He's written 15 books. I won't mention his name.
His name's Peter Reinhardt. He's the only guy that's wrote 15 books.
I won't mention his name. But the thing about it is that when I mentioned Biga, and again, I didn't mention any names, and I'm not saying, I esteem Peter immensely. I think he's one of the best.
Hey, stop mentioning his name. We're cutting that out, Brady. Mark the thing.
Thank you. No, but I love Peter, honestly.
I love him, too.
So let's go on, because that's not who I'm talking about. So the thing about it is that he said to me, Biga is made from yeast. You make it from commercial yeast. Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
I said axe, not ask. Let me ask you something. Where did my great grandmother know fuck commercial yeast?
Right.
She made a Biga her whole life. From the moment she started learning how to make bread to the moment she died. Where did she know? And she made Biga every time she made bread. So how do we standardize Biga with commercial yeast?
Well, what it's been standardized as currently, and I think this needs like, you know, again, like everything else, it needs a little bit of nuance. But because Biga, Poolish, wild yeast starter culture essentially made the same, it means the same thing, right? So what it's been standardized out to is if we say Biga, because we're just saying the same thing in different languages, essentially. So when we say
correct.
Biga, we're talking about a 50% hydration on a pre-ferment.
Why? That's
because
false.
We had to.
That's
I know.
False. I know what the name. I know why.
The old saying. Because we had to standardize it.
The old saying, right? Biga dura, biga sicura.
Okay. Well, you know explain that to me.
Biga dura, a hard biga,
uh-huh.
is a secure biga.
So it's 50%-ish, 60%
right. So
by hydration.
Yeah. Right, it's hard because it's 50% hydration. Then you have more control over it.
Yes, correct.
So this is where...
It's got a lot more food in it.
Right, but this is... And that's where you get... Also, that's where you get the walnuts flavor from.
Right.
Is the hard biga
well,
is where you get
like
the
you
water.
Said, you can keep it at 72, and if you need it more active, you can bring it out into the regular
right,
weather.
But
and
that doesn't mean that that's what everybody did.
No. So what the was the
saying,
other one?
The saying was biga dura, biga sicura, right?
Okay.
The biga really means just a pre-ferment.
No, I know. 100%.
You had families that
everybody,
would do biga as they do Poolish.
Everybody
it could be
agrees.
100%.
Everybody agrees with what you're saying right now, I think. Like anybody who knows anything. But the reason why it became biga's 50% hydration ish.
But why commercial yeast?
And no, forget about commercial yeast.
No, but that's what they say. They say that biga has to be with commercial yeast. Why?
I don't think they...
Really? Who doesn't?
If they're saying that, they're wrong.
I would like some emails.
I think we need a little bit
telling
more...
Telling me why.
I think they need... And then when they say Poolish, it's 100-ish percent hydration.
100-ish, right.
And when they say
pate
fermenté, it's salt and 120%.
Yeah.
Hydration.
What about pan levant? Where's the pan levant?
I never heard of that one.
Levant bread. Levant?
Levon. Yes, so Levon.
Isn't that about 70% hydration?
Levon in America
can we
is.
Have, do we have phone and callers? We don't have that. Because I like
Levon,
to hear from
you. Levon, I think, is currently, right now, and this might change next year or 2 years or 3 years, but Levon is the preferred term over sourdough in America.
But it's the same
to
thing.
To describe, okay. To describe a natural Levon product, whether it's Beeger or Poulish or anything, because sourdough can be misleading.
Yes.
Because it doesn't
because sourdough
have to be
sour. Is not a flavor.
Yes. Well, you can naturally leaven a product without it being sour.
Correct.
So sourdough has been replaced with Levon.
I think I just fell in love with you. I just want you to know. For that one statement.
Well,
because people
I'm
think,
already in love with you.
Because people think that sourdough means that it has to taste sour.
No.
But the best bakers ever were the ones that whose product didn't taste sour.
Well, Chad Robinson describes his final Levon as a young Levon instead of a mature Levon. He says he doesn't prefer a mature Levon because he doesn't want his bread to be overly sour. He's not looking for that flavor. He's just looking for a naturally leavened product.
A little acidity is great, but we want naturally leavened product.
Yeah. And when you warm ferment things.
Can I go off on a tangent for half a second?
Yes, absolutely, you can.
Do you know what the penalty for impersonating a bread maker in Roman era was?
No.
It was death.
Death. Yeah, those guys were hardcore back then.
If you said you were a bread baker and you couldn't produce a good loaf of bread, you were dead.
They fucking, the bread baker's guild, they were powerful. They were a fucking crew.
Because think about it.
They weren't fucking not, they were hard motherfuckers.
Yeah, but.
No, but the guilds in Rome, whether you're talking about the fishmongers or the bread bakers or whatever, they controlled the local fucking shit like the mafia.
Yeah.
Because it was voting, you know? And the fucking dudes had to go to them to get the fucking votes they needed.
I want to bring it back to what you were saying earlier.
Bring it back.
To the fact that it was magic.
And
those guys, it was magic.
Yeah. Who could explain it?
No one could explain it. So if you said, I'm a magician, I'm a bread baker, I'm a magician, and then you couldn't produce, you were done.
No, that was it. Done. And it was very secretive back then, too.
Do you know another interesting fact? I'm sorry.
Tell me.
I'm so fucking
No,
crazy.
Don't be sorry. I'm here to fucking talk.
I'm geeking out right now.
Yo, you're here
during,
to geek out.
During the Civil War in our country, there were bread bakers with the troops. You know what they used to do? They used to get their starter, and they would put in a canister, and they would sleep with it at night. So it would be the perfect temperature to propagate for the next morning to make bread for the troops.
And do you know how they cooked that? Or you don't?
Tell me more.
I don't. I don't know. I have no idea.
So my understanding was that it was in a cast iron pot.
Okay. Which existed
coals,
in the world.
With the coals, coals underneath and coals on top.
Makes perfect sense.
And that's how they bake bread in that era.
That makes sense.
Do we realize the importance of bread bakers in humanity? And now we're looked at.
I mean, most people do.
They don't because we take it such for granted. Such for granted. But just stop a second. Just stop. Everybody stop for half a second and say, okay, I need bread. And there's no stores. There's no bakers. Right? There's none of that. Modern humanity is non-existent. Stop for half a second. How do you make bread? How do you make bread? Think about it for half a second, the complexity that is involved. We take this art form at so... sorry, I'm getting...
Stop breathing into your microphone.
Oh, super sorry. Annoying.
We take this art form so for granted, and we shouldn't. We need to understand the validity of what we've done for humanity. What we have, the famines that we have saved, built humanity. I'll tell you one more interesting fact. One more interesting fact, okay? You give a person flour and water. They drink the water, they eat the flour. They won't last 3 months. That same human being puts flour and water together, lets it ferment, sticks it in a bake oven. They eat the bread, and they live indefinitely. Something happens in bread breaking.
Right. They're getting their fucking hydration. They're getting their nutrients delivered to them because of the fermentation process and bringing it down. It is miraculous.
It is miraculous.
All right. I could, push back on that a little bit. But you're like, I could. But you're like 90% right. The only thing I would push back on is the fact that, no matter what socioeconomical status that you had 200 years ago, you had access to this. You didn't. No, you didn't.
I will push back on you on that.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. For some, it was harder than others, categorically. And I think what you're talking about is refined wheat versus just get wheat and mill it and make some basic bread.
No, that's not what I'm talking about.
So what are you talking about?
So what I'm talking about is the fact that, all right, look at before the Industrial Revolution, which didn't hit Italy until well after World War II, until at least, Mussolini started in 1922 because of the war, didn't get very far with it. He was trying to, capture Ethiopia to be like a wheat belt. That didn't work out too well. He had a lot of other things to worry about. And Italy didn't become industrialized in agriculture until really 10 years after World War II. Really, it was 20 years.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'm having a hard time with this.
I know, it's a hard time.
Because my pushback is, let's talk about the Kingdom of Two Sicilies.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about the
fact I'm very familiar with that history.
Let's talk about the fact that it was the wealthiest kingdom.
It was.
Top three in the world.
Right, but who does that benefit back then? Because it's not just Italy who's dealing with these problems, it's everyone.
Hold on.
Everyone, the richest countries are cauldron cooking back then.
Hold on a second. Let's back up for half a second.
Okay.
The Kingdom of Two Sicilies was so prevalent that when the French had the revolution, all of their master chefs immigrated to southern Italy.
Yeah.
So much so that the word for master chef for southern Italy became monzu, which is derived from the word monsieur. That's where the word comes from. Let's move on. Pasta. Pizza. Right? Bread at high level. All developed in the Kingdom of Two Sicilies.
Correct.
Right? With Naples as its capital.
Correct.
They weren't in an impoverished state. At the time, the kingdom was the third wealthiest kingdom in the world.
Yes.
With art and science and technology.
Yeah, but it wasn't an egalitarian society.
It wasn't a what?
That only benefited the top 1% who were the rulers and 5% who worked for the rulers.
It was aristocratic. A political system that I do not condone and do not believe in.
But all 100%. I'm saying is this idea of this peasant cuisine in the Kingdom of Two Sicilies.
I agree with you. Agree with you there.
95% of the cuisine. 95% of the population was subsistence living. You're telling me French chefs fleeing France were working for peasants?
You are absolutely correct.
No.
That didn't happen.
And there wasn't no such thing as restaurants back then. in a way that we understand
that
them
today. That
is correct.
I agree with you.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with you 100%.
The cuisine evolved and persisted, but in the ruling classes, just like everywhere else.
People that think our food is peasant food is uneducated.
Yes.
And I agree with you 100%.
Okay.
And I will always... I also need to say, just half a second.
Yeah.
That what the Piemontesi did to the Southern Italians...
Fucking...
Wasn't exactly...
Oh, man. You're going to get me on a rant right now.
Yeah, don't go off because you might get in a political turmoil.
No.
Wasn't exactly gentlemanly.
It wasn't. And I'm saying you're going to make me go off because this takes a little bit of time to explain. So when you read, like, there's a great book called Tarroni that's, I think, like, standard fucking reading.
I hate that term, by the way.
Huh?
I hate the term.
But do you know the book? So that's the book that explains,
I'll look into it.
That's a book that everybody reads. I think it was just recently translated into English. But Tarroni is... like explaining like the rape of, you know, the Piemontese Sardinian kingdom of the Kingdom of Savoy, and what they did to the Kingdom of Two Sicilies, and stripping the wealth and subjugating the people in a very brutal way. The reason why they did that was because...
the massacres that happened.
Oh, yeah.
That no one talks about.
And the reason...
millions of people.
The reason why they did that is because the Kingdom of Two Sicilies was strong, and when they unified the country, you know, all these other things were like very small, fell in line very easily, and they were worried about, they're like, this is far from our base of power. We have to fucking rob these people of our shit, and it was fucked up.
Yeah, no, it was fucked up. It was a means to stabilize
but
the
for the average person
the
it made their life more fucked up, but
that's why we
their
saw,
life was already fucked up.
Yeah, but that's why they left, though. That's why they left Southern Italy.
When did they leave?
Well, what was it, 1880s, 1900s?
What, with the Barattas?
That's why they all left.
Yeah,
because there was no future. They all saw it. The Piemonte,
they were starving. And you're talking about immigrating. You're talking about the diaspora.
Right.
Yeah, they were fucking starving to death.
Why did that happen? When we were the wealthiest, we were the third wealthiest nation in the world. Then we became the starving nation of the world. How did that happen? Except for the Piemontese.
You're not wrong.
Piemontese friends.
You're right. But the idea that it was fucking... like, dope, everybody was doing fucking good before that. You know, what opportunity did they have to leave before that?
It was, no.
The 1880s provided an opportunity to come to America.
Not
America
was
a backwater before 1880s, which you couldn't immigrate to.
Hold on a second. How many Sicilians immigrated to the United States prior?
Millions.
Hold on. Prior to 1861.
I do not know the answer to that question, but I invite you to do the research on America. Was in war before they were in war. They were literally a backwater who weren't accepting any immigrants.
Oh yeah, that was a shit show. Look,
who was
there
going
was
to
a
America?
Lot of bad
were the Germans
right?
going to America before 1880?
I don't.
They
know.
Weren't.
I don't know about German history. All I can speak about is...
the Irish, the Italians, the Germans. They weren't coming here before those times.
Not until 1861.
Right.
Southern Italians were not immigrants, were not immigrating until the Piemontese took over Southern Italy. That's a very important fact to remember.
It is a fact, but because it wasn't... there was no ships in Italy to take them over during that time.
Of course there was.
It got so fired.
Ma che cazzo dici? From Genoa, they were coming all the time. But from Naples, they weren't.
Yeah.
It's not until the Piemontese conquered southern Italy
when
that we immigrated.
Riddle me this.
Yeah.
All right. When you imagine a ship.
Yeah.
All right. When you see a video or you imagine or there's a picture drawn, is it a sail ship?
Well, sure. At that time.
No.
At that time, why not?
No. When Christopher Columbus came over, explorers were in sail ships.
Yeah.
When immigrants came over, what were they on?
Steamboats.
Steamboats.
Yeah.
So sure. Steamboats were invented during that time, and that's what made it possible for the mass immigration of these people. Because before it was fucking possible.
I understand what made it possible, but what gave the will? Why
the
did people...
The ability.
Why,
and things got worse.
But why
I'm
did
not
people,
saying things didn't get
why
worse.
Why did people get up and say, I'm going to leave everybody I love? I'm going to leave everything I know.
Because we're fucking starving to death.
Correct.
Worse.
Correct.
We were up from 1,200 to 800 calories.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
But they should have had 2,000.
And why did it
happen? But 1,200 calories is still subsistence living.
But why did it happen?
The Piemontese.
Sorry.
I'm not sorry. I agree with you completely.
I'm
okay,
sorry.
Gio, we got to rewind here real quick.
I might be outing myself as a...
No,
crazy
you're fine. Guy. You're fine. No, you're not crazy. You are of the same belief as the vast majority of Italians today. I know a bunch of guys from the other side. This is what they're taught in school.
I'm going to say something really crazy.
Hold on.
I may
hold
believe.
On. Gio, Gio.
Yeah,
no,
sorry. I'll focus.
No. Gio, I need your fucking history right now. When did you come to America? Where did you immigrate to when you were 12 or 13?
My life story.
Yes. You need this.
Okay. So I was actually born in the United States. My parents immigrated here in 69. When I was 6 years old, my parents decided to move back. My father stayed here. My mother went back to curate a home. And they tried to figure out how they were going to move back. And I was 13. I said, oh, the fuck is this shit? My dad's in America, land of opportunity, and I'm sitting here with sheep and goats. I think I want to go back. And I made the drive to come back because in my view, and this is when I get political, in my view, the system I was living with was not working.
Where did he
and
move
I
to?
Was in,
Brooklyn?
I was in Kanikati.
Did he move to Brooklyn, though,
no,
in America?
No,
where did he move
I
to?
Went straight to Southern California.
Okay.
In a town called Montebello.
Oh, okay.
Huge Italian community. I didn't know how lucky I was. We had 6 Italian delis, 4 Italian restaurants in a community of 36,000 people. And it was absolutely wonderful. And... yeah, that's my life story. That's all I got. It's
so
not very interesting.
Do?
That's all I got.
You get to Southern California. You're 13.
I know not a word of English.
You don't know a word of English?
Not a single word.
Really?
I forgot all of my English.
Did you get put in ESL?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
I learned good English today.
I learned Spanish before I learned English.
Get the fuck out of
here. I swear to you.
Great.
Because everybody around me spoke Spanish. Spanish is so close to Italian. I learned Spanish before I learned English. Categorically.
So, when you... All right, so now you're over here. You're with your mother. Your father's already here. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
So, he's in Southern California.
My mother's
little town.
We're all in Southern California in Montebello.
And what are they doing?
So, my mother is...
What are they doing to, like, get by?
My mother's... They were doing all right. My mother was a seamstress for Ethan Allen, and my dad was a quality control inspector for not Boeing, Northrop. They used to make missiles. Northrop
is like a military industrial complex.
Missiles, he was an engineer.
Raytheon, Northrop.
That's what he did.
What's the other big one?
I don't know.
Brady, you know. What am I thinking of?
But that's what he did.
From Italy and got that job right away.
Well, no. He worked his way up to that. That's why he never went back.
Well, tell me that fucking story. I want to know
You should have my dad here because my dad is.
Well, tell me what you know. Your dad's alive?
Yo, yeah.
Oh, we're gonna have him fucking on.
Yeah, we should have him on.
We're gonna have him on, but I want you to tell your version of the story.
So my dad, the thing about it is that my dad. His issue, he loves Italy. He loves Sicily. And he wanted to move back. That's why he sent us over. But the thing about it is he went back and he's like, what am I going to do here? You know, he was an engineer. He was doing parts for missiles and gears and all this stuff. And he's like, what am I going to go do in Sicily? I'm going to tend to sheep? I mean, what am I going to do over here?
But how did he learn all that? Did he go to school here? Like, how do you get into that?
When he came here, my father, his first job was scrubbing scrap metal to be recycled for these factories. And he put himself through adult school, put himself through adult high school, put himself through community college, went into engineering, and then got himself into a job to do that quality control thing. That's what he did.
So you're telling me he just broke his fucking calzone, broke his ass, went to all these schools, worked shitty jobs, raised money until he got the education to get into one of these fields and stepping stone.
That's correct.
That's fucking incredible.
That's what he did. And then he, like a fucking genius, he went to the restaurant business.
What do you do in the restaurant business?
Well, so he essentially, they made enough nest egg to where they were done in the mid-50s. Isn't that everybody's dream?
Right.
Mid-50s?
Yes, 100%.
They were done. They didn't want anything fancy, but they had enough money. They were done. And then their pizza maker son, yours truly, said, hey, you know what you should do? You should open up a restaurant.
Of course.
Like an idiot.
This idea of the planet.
So that's what they did. And they had three tables, and then it went to eight tables, and then it went for 15 tables, and then it went to 20 tables, and now they have a restaurant that sees 320 people.
Today?
Today, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's called
Nora's. They still run it.
It's called Nora's Cuisine, yeah.
What is it called?
Nora's.
Nora's.
Nora's Cuisine.
And what does that mean?
Nora's my mother's name.
Oh, Nora's.
Yeah.
Nora's Cuisine in Monticello, California.
No, they're here in Las Vegas.
In Las Vegas?
Yeah. We moved from Monticello. So when they decide, I'm sorry, I'm confusing everybody. When they decided to retire, quote unquote, they came to Las Vegas.
Okay. And what was the reasoning behind that?
Two reasons.
Did they like to gamble?
One, I don't want to. One, I shouldn't say, but my
one,
mother.
One, they like to gamble a lot.
But my mother likes to gamble. I shouldn't say that. But the other thing is that my mother also suffered from arthritis. She suffers from arthritis. And the desert heat, the lack of humidity helped her with
helps
that.
Helps it, yeah.
Yeah, so she felt a lot better in the desert. So they decided to move here.
People have been sending people out to the desert over here for hundreds of years because, tuberculosis, arthritis, whatever it is.
All that stuff, right? And so now they're bored, and for shits and giggles, they open up a restaurant.
We know how to cook. Let's share a cuisine with everybody. Yeah. Why the fuck not?
But here we are 30 years later. 30 years later, they've done wonders.
But you have a different spot.
I do. My place is called Monzu. Again, okay. The name that I was telling
you
about.
When did you start it? Because I know nothing about this. When did you start it and what is it all about? I know what you're passionate about. You're passionate about why you started cultures and doing the stuff the old school way. All right?
So I started making
what is
pizzas.
Monzu? What does it mean? Remind us all. And
so again, Monzu is from... leftover from Monsieur, from the French Revolutionary War, where all the cooks came down to southern Italy, and they couldn't say Monsieur, so they said Monsieur.
So that means chef. Okay, so my translation is that is like you give a fuck. You know
about
what I mean?
About what you're doing.
About what you're doing. You're going to use any advantage, any evolution, any new technique. You're not limiting yourself to anything.
You're a professional.
Yes, you're a professional.
You're a professional.
That's what that means. Manzu means you're a fucking professional.
In the kitchen.
So, so then what's the goal of your kitchen and what does your kitchen provide? Because I've never been to your restaurant. I'm very curious.
You're coming to dinner tomorrow. And if you don't, I'm going to kidnap you and bring you to my restaurant.
Good fucking luck, bro.
I got people. So in all seriousness, I see myself as a curator of old techniques.
Okay.
That's where I live. Because I think that something that transcends generations has a truth that is inexplicable.
You said it right.
I didn't, because the friend of Broncos.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. You can't explain it, in other words.
You can't explain.
Yes, the friend of Broncos kicking my butt. we can't explain it. And to me, that is truth. To me, that is stuff that matters. And so, curate. Because molecular science tells us that in a shallow pot, because the atoms go up and down, it creates flavors. And yet, our great-grandmother knew to cook sauces in a shallow pot because it tasted better. Right. And I trust my grandmother better than molecular science. Because it's time tested.
You know, I don't think you're wrong. Like, there's a a real bias. You know, like when you're studying something and like something else that works doesn't make sense, and you take a look at it. If you look at it in 1% the wrong way, you're not gonna fucking get it. You understand? So yeah, I'm in 100% agreement with you. I think it's, you know, learn what we can, because we have access to like unlimited information today. You don't have to go to CIA anymore.
We got a Google.
You got a Google. You don't have to go to French Culinary Institute. You can literally learn everything for a fraction of the cost of like the cost of entry, which is between like 100,000.
It's about curiosity.
Yeah. Curious. No. So on that, what do you serve at your restaurant? Like, if somebody walks into your restaurant, there's people listening from all around the country, maybe all around the world, that speak English. When they walk in, what are they getting?
They're getting a flavor profile that was truth to our great grandparents. So let's talk about, first of all, the cornerstone is the dough that I spoke about.
Cornicione.
Right?
Yeah.
Natural fermentation, the flavor in that. And then recipes that aren't really valued. I feel like cuisine today has gone to how many ingredients can we pile up on a frickin' plate? And instead, what I want to know is how do we express 3 ingredients perfectly? That's what I want to know. Like my grandmother's chicken that I have in that dish. And so when you have that chicken dish in my restaurant, it's like you're eating at my grandmother's house. And really all it has is chicken, onions, and potatoes.
And how is that broke? Are you...
So I'm slow roasting it. Of course, I have olive oil, a little bit of butter, salt, pepper. Of course, there's other ingredients.
Your sous chefs are like picking all 3 of these ingredients, trying to make them perfect, and then combining them for the plate.
And it's all about methodical, very precise timing. You put it in the oven for this much time. You uncover it for this much time. You roast it for this much time. And it's duplicating because... At the end of the day, you know what I want is when people come into my restaurant is for them to feel like they're eating in my home. It's like they come for Sunday dinner and they're eating my food that I cook for my family. That's what I want. And if I could do that, then I'm successful. I don't care about the numbers, how many people come in, how profitable I am. I know that's crazy to think that way as a businessman, but I want people to eat my food and say, I'm at Giovanni's Sunday dinner. And that is my measure of success.
I got a question for you. Why don't you fucking do that once a week?
Are you challenging me right now again?
No. I'm just asking you. No, I'm asking you.
I know,
like,
my wife might kill me if I bring people.
Well, I'm just saying, like, are you closed any days of the week or are you open 7 days? Why don't you take Sundays and say Sundays, like, it's, let's say it's reservation only. There, if you have a food allergy, go fuck yourself. Like, like, do it like there's a spot in Staten Island. It's called fuck. I forget the fucking name of it, but they for years now they have a set like three grandmas with three different menus.
Oh, I love
it. But for like 5 years. They had a running ad in the American OG, like Italian newspaper. And every week they would like give the grandma like three, you know, cooks, not even sous chefs, like just cooks to help them out. And then Nona would come in there and she could have been from like any part of Italy or any part of New York or New Jersey or whatever.
It didn't matter. She knew how
to
cook.
She would make a menu. It would be set. It was family style. You walk in, you pay, you know, whatever it is, $70, and they serve you whatever you want.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. If you got a dietary restriction, go fuck yourself. Like, there's no...
This is my dream come true.
Well, what you could do it every Sunday, Gio. Like, just grab your fucking balls with your hands, all right, and say you're going to fucking do it. All right? Because you shouldn't be open fucking... You're going against your culture by being open 7 days a week to begin with.
Fair enough.
All right? So say, I'm going to pay homage to my fucking culture by on Sundays, which is a religious holy fucking day. And instead of fucking going to church, I'm going to have the fucking Monsignor over in fucking Vegas come over and bless this fucking day that we're fucking devoting it to this old school fucking shit that everybody should fucking know. All right?
Awesome. Wow.
On that note, we're taking a small break.
You just blew my mind right now.
We're going to be right back. We're
going
to let...
Where are we going?
We're going to get a fucking cigarette and another drink. We'll be right back.
Oh, God.
We are brought to you by Empire Bakery Equipment. Whether you're just starting out or you've been established for years, Empire can provide you with quality baking equipment and advice. One of the reasons that we love Empire Bake is their service. Have you ever had a pizza oven you can't get fixed? Well, that's not going to happen with Empire. Empire has nationwide 24-hour service with as little as 1 hour to get to you if anything ever goes wrong. Passion, dedication, and experience. That's what dreams are made of. Empire Dream Builders understand that logistics of turning your baking dream into a reality. We are also brought to you by Ciao Tomatoes, Il Pomodoro di Napoli, which means the tomatoes of Napoli. Grown in the Campania region of Italy, known for its volcanic soil, Ciao Tomatoes is, in my opinion, the greatest tomatoes in Italy and perfect for you. The value that they have and the tradition that they represent, I believe, is unmatched.